I don't think I've ever done a power lunch before. I'm used to Rotary clubs where the average age is about 80. I'm used to middle school banquets and things like that. So the intellectual and the business horsepower in this room is definitely humbling and a little intimidating. But on behalf of your NFL team, the Carolina Panthers, we try to do the best we can. It's a great honor to be here. A couple items of business. First of all, Perrin did a great job introducing me. I appreciate that. He left out some of my bio facts. I wrote on the bio that I'm kind to small children and animals. I give unselfishly to charity. I'm a dedicated recycler and an all-around swell guy. I'm also passionate about music. I'm the original drummer for the band Break Wind and Fire. I started Break Wind and Fire back in the late 90s, and we burst onto the music scene very suddenly and then sort of dissipated, I guess you might say, when our bass player moved to Florida, Ned, the Grateful Ned Collette. But I have a band called the Franklin Street Band and another band called Mick and the Ultras. We disbanded a few years ago, but it's not that much of a resume, really. But I do want you to know that ever since I was a little Mickey Mixon growing up in Chapel Hill, all I ever wanted to be was a sports broadcaster. All I ever wanted to be, once I found out that because my mother smoked and drank so much during my gestation, that I had been cheated out of the genetics that were supposed to propel me to a Cam Newton-esque physique and a great career on the field. Once I realized what an unfair science genetics is, all I ever wanted to do was carry around a notepad, a tape recorder, a microphone. I've been curious-minded my whole life. I like trying to know what these athletes know, these sponsors, these coaches, these fans who make up different teams and sports and what we all enjoy. I apologize for my voice. I'm good for about one little chest cold a year. So you can imagine how yesterday was a difficult day at work for your humble correspondent. Imagine the last person any of our coaches, any of our players want to see coming is a skinny, bald-headed, sick sportscaster with a tape recorder wanting to ask questions about why we've lost three straight games. But I said, I have to know because I'm going to Rock Hill tomorrow, and I know they will want to know. A couple of other items from the news desk. Rob and Courtney and Theron and them, I want to thank them for their organization in bringing me to town. Nuclear power plants have been put online with less organization than they brought to my meeting here today. They called me, they texted me, they emailed me, they faxed me. I provided them with all my PIN numbers, my Social Security number, my whereabouts at all times, and they tracked me to this spot, these exact coordinates. So you guys are in great hands with these fine people. Also, it's humbling to look out into the crowd and see a Hall of Fame broadcaster like my friend Alan Miller of WRHI and Interstate 107. Alan has done it all. He's sold it. He's broadcast it. He could take a transmitter apart, put it back together again. And broadcasters like Alan are, you know, what I aspired to when I was a little boy, wanting to somehow be a part of a radio station or a community that gives to the community. You don't know how rare it is now to have radio stations that care about what's going on locally, that have their fingers in high school football. If a water main breaks on Main Street, they're on the scene. If a bill's getting ready to be passed into law that will affect you, you can count on their reporting. And, of course, they cover sports as well. We thank you, Alan, for the relationship. We cherish it from the Carolina Panthers to you and to your staff and the station. Also, you got the great Tim Newman here. How's anybody supposed to give a speech at a power lunch with Tim Newman out there heckling me, looking at me, laughing at all the wrong times? Tim is you were formerly the Charlotte Sports Commission, is that right, Tim? And now in York County doing great things to raise awareness for autism. And so, Tim, it's great to see you, man. Appreciate you. So, come with me in your mind, if you will. We're going to have a little fun. I brought a couple of hats and some T-shirts. And if my voice tends to bog down, I'm going to turn over to Morgan Cox and let her give the rest of my speech. And then she can tape record herself and then interview herself after this is all over. But like I told you, all I ever wanted to be was a sports broadcaster growing up. I was that irritating little kid that had the tape recorder, that did the play-by-play. I kept a running dialogue of all the putts I rolled in, all the baskets I made, all the touchdowns, and there weren't many of those. But I just kept a running narrative out loud in my mind. I always wondered why my parents drank so much, and I realized as an adult it was probably my fault for never shutting up and practicing the drums all the time at late hours. I probably drove them to it. But I want you to come with me in your mind's eye to one of the most important days of my life. It's the spring of 2005, and the great Mr. Jerry Richardson and the Carolina Panthers have reached out to me to ask me if I'd consider interviewing for their vacant play-by-play job. So after a series of day-long interviews, I came to Charlotte three different times. I had to get a haircut each time back when I had hair. I was about out of suits. So three day-long interviews go by over the course of three or four weeks. And then finally, there's another interview. And on this day, I'm to meet Mr. Richardson. So I drive to Charlotte from my home in Chapel Hill. I can tell everybody, all the staff is profoundly nervous that I'm going to meet Mr. Richardson. This is going to be a big day. I wasn't nervous, but they were so nervous, I began to question whether I should be nervous. So we go to lunch, and at 12:45, everybody's patting their watch going, okay, Mick, hurry up. I'm a slow eater. They said, Mick, come on. We got to get back to the stadium. We don't want to be late for Mr. Richardson. I said, well, we're not meeting him until 2 o'clock. Well, you don't understand. You don't want to be late. And whatever you do, don't call him Jerry. Nobody calls him Jerry. Call him Mr. Richardson. I said, okay, yeah, am I supposed to bow or curtsy or what? I don't know. So the big moment comes. Into Mr. Richardson's office we go. The door opens, and here stands 6'6", Jerry Richardson, wearing a suit that cost more than the car I drove to Charlotte in. Elegant southern man with a slow way of speaking. And my hand disappears into his. We shake hands. We talk for a few minutes. And then he looks at Henry Thomas, Riley Fields, and a couple others, bangs his fist on the desk and says, Henry, how about if I take Mick up and show him where Rosalind and I watch the games? They all say, Mr. Richardson, that'd be great. So Mr. Richardson reaches into his pocket, takes out a secret card, and a secret bookcase turns into a secret elevator, and we go up into a secret suite. I've never seen any of these places since, but up we go into this luxury suite. And before I know it, I'm looking out over this awesome patch of real estate, Bank of America Stadium. I'm looking at the manicured grass. I'm looking at the empty stands. I'm looking at this vibrant center of banking and commerce. And I'm looking at skyscrapers that almost seem as though they're leaning over the rim of the stadium to eavesdrop on my conversation with Jerry Richardson. Mr. Richardson motions me to sit into a black leather chair. My scrawny rear end disappears into this chair, and the chair seems to just wrap its arms around me and just hug me to it. I look at the armrest, and I'm thinking, this is the nicest chair I've ever sat in. I mean, leather. What did they feed the cow that gave his or her life for this chair? I can't believe how comfortable this is. Mr. Richardson begins to lecture me on what he and the organization expect from their future play-by-play announcer. He says that they view this hire as a very important hire, that this position will be expected to do certain things, conduct himself in a certain way. He asked me, do you know Vin Scully? I said, yes, sir, I do. As Mr. Richardson is talking, I'm thinking, Buttery Chair, Bank of America Stadium. I got this. I made it this far. I wouldn't be sitting here if they hadn't narrowed their focus and if at least I wasn't in their crosshairs. And I'm almost getting sleepy because I'm so comfortable in this chair and I'm so exhausted from all these interviews. But all of a sudden, Mr. Richardson, as he's lecturing me, reaches into his pocket and he pulls out a tube of chapstick and he uncaps the chapstick and he's about ready to put some on his own lips. And then an amazing thing happened. He paused. He looked at me. And then he reached out and offered me the chapstick. And his eyebrows cocked up. So now I'm staring at chapstick. And I'm thinking, what in the blue hell does a man do when another man offers you his chapstick? How could I have lived almost 5 decades and have no man ever told me what the answer to the chapstick test is? How could my father have failed me in such a substantive way? How could my coaches, my teachers, my Cub Scout leader, how could all these men in my life have let me come and go and never told me what you do when a man offers you his chapstick? And I'm thinking, okay, there goes the dream. There goes all the American Legion baseball, the dirt track car racing, the Pop Warner football, all the times I sat on cinder blocks and broadcast church league softball and Pop Warner football to an audience of zero, all the work I've done, the miles I've traveled. Here it goes, because I don't know what to do when another man offers you his chapstick. And I know that there is an answer. I know that it's either A, son, if a man offers you his chapstick, you take it and you put it on your lips, because no man wants to go to war with a man who won't use another man's chapstick. Or it's B, son, if a man ever offers you his chapstick, you decline, because no man wants to go to war with a man who's slimy and spineless enough to take another man's chapstick and put it on his own lips. But is it A or B? And my life is going by in a second by second. I mean, milliseconds are just flying by. And I'm borderline panicked. Meanwhile, I'm looking at his lips to see if there are any kind of, I don't know, lesions or anything that might might influence my decision. And Morgan, please don't put this on television, what I'm telling you right now. Not that anybody would want to see it anyway. And I don't know what to do. Finally, I look at the chapstick. I look at Mr. Richardson. He's still out there. I mean, just right in my face. I said, Mr. Richardson, thank you. I'm fine. That seemed to satisfy him. He put it on his own lips. He continued to talk. A few weeks later, I get a phone call. I come to Charlotte and take a drug test, and I'm offered the job. Fast forward 5 years. I'm working late one night, about, I don't know, not that late, maybe 6:45. And I'm at my little desk, my cubicle at Bank of America Stadium, one of my favorite spots. And all of a sudden, Mr. Richardson hovers over me. I see this big shadow over me, like a big chicken hawk. And he doesn't just pull up a chair. He hops up on my desk, so he's sitting. He's just sitting right on all my stuff. He's just sitting there. And he looks at me and he says, Mick, how you doing? I said, Mr. Richardson, I'm doing fine. He says, anybody been messing with you? I said, no, sir. He said, well, if anybody does, you let me know, because Rosalind and I want you and your family to be proud of where you work. As he's telling me this, I reach into my pocket and I pull out some chapstick. And I'm about to put the chapstick to my own lips. And he looks down at me and he reaches out his hand and he says, may I? And I could not believe it. Why do so many interesting things happen to me in my life? And in this metaphysical-like voice that I didn't even recognize as my own, I said, be my guest. He takes it. He puts out his pinky finger and he puts some of my chapstick on his pinky finger and puts it to his lips and handed me back the tube. That's the answer to the chapstick test. But I did not know that. I did not know the pinky finger postulate. So had I chosen A instead of B, someone else would be here at your power lunch. And I'd still be, I don't know, I'd probably be a dermatologist, maybe. I don't know. I've always liked skin. But we have a different owner now. We have an owner, David Tepper, who's a hedge fund savant. David Tepper's net worth is over $10 billion. Let's talk numbers for a second. Tim, how old do you think you are when you've lived 1 billion seconds? That's pretty old. Not quite. When you've lived 30 years, 9 months, 4 weeks, 3 days, basically almost 31 years, you've lived 1 billion seconds. There's 7 billion people in the world. So David Tepper has been enormously successful. A friend of mine was telling me after he bought the team, Mick, maybe he'll build a practice facility somewhere near Carowinds. And I said, yeah, or maybe he'll buy Carowinds and build it there and change the name to Carolina Winds or something like that. You just don't know. With a man with these kind of resources and this type creative energy, you just don't know. Anything's, I mean, our wildest dreams are possible. What if I told you that the goal from my primary employer is to make the Carolina Panthers not just to work on our local brand, not just to work on our regional brand, not just to work on our national brand. But what if I told you that Tom Glick, our new president, and David Tepper, our new owner, want your Carolina Panthers to be a global brand? What if I told you that a couple of 100 acres somewhere near here is going to be purchased very soon in a state-of-the-art practice facility with restaurants, shopping, banking, condos, apartments is going to be built. And the business center of the Carolina Panthers will move here. What if I told you that Bank of America Stadium in uptown Charlotte is going to undergo a renovation unlike anything you could ever have imagined? What if they put a roof over it? What if they blow it up and build a new stadium on that footprint? What if our practice fields, 8 acres of prime real estate in uptown Charlotte, are turned into parking, restaurants, housing, a bubble with bands on our game days, with maybe a skywalk that takes people from there right over to the stadium? What if I told you that soon you'd be able to place a bet to gamble at Bank of America Stadium? What if I told you that soon there'll be a Panthers.com, our website, in German, in Mandarin, in Spanish, all these things and more? Of course, our primary goal remains absolute victory. Our primary goal remains to bring not just a championship, but multiple championships to you. And we'll continue to work extremely hard. Talk more about our team in just a second. But I want you to know that we're not staying the same. That what we have done, while perhaps impressive, it's awesome, I think. Hope you feel that it's awesome to have an NFL team here. But what we've done, while significant, is in the mind of our new owner and our new president, not good enough. So if you don't hear anything else that we talk about today, we want you to know that Our goal is to take your investment in the Carolina Panthers, your emotional investment, your fiduciary investment. You're one of us. If you just listen to a few minutes of a game on one of Allen's radio stations, you're part of our family. But our goal is to take that investment you make and return it to you multiple fold. David Tepper's something else. Have you met him? You met him, Tim? I was looking forward to meeting him. I hadn't met him. I was looking forward to it, and I was just about totally worn out from having to look like I was hard at work at my desk with my door open. It's very exhausting to be sitting up straight, ramrod straight, like I was hard at it, you know, memorizing the opposing team, all this, when I was actually looking at car parts on the internet. But he walked by me, I mean, 20 times he walked by, but he was always in a hurry. He has this purposeful stride. Finally, July 26, Thursday morning, in Wofford at Spartanburg on our campus there where we train. I walk in about 9 o'clock in the morning. I'm looking for my dorm key, and the door opens in the football office, and Coach Rivera just about knocks into me. And Coach says, "Hey, Mick, how you doing?" I said, "Coach, I'm doing great." Well, then out of the door comes David Tepper. And I've studied David Tepper. I'd already read about his life growing up in Pittsburgh. I'd read about the mansion that he bought and tore down because somebody told him he wasn't going to get a promotion. So he bought their mansion, tore it down, built a new mansion there. I'd already read about Appaloosa, the hedge fund, the Carnegie Mellon. I watched his speech he gave, commencement address to Carnegie Mellon. So I couldn't wait to meet him. So I said to Coach Rivera, with David Tepper right here, Coach Rivera right here, I said, "Coach, I feel a little left out because I hadn't met the new man yet." And I turned to him and I said, "Dave, my name's Mick Mixon. I'm one of your broadcast guys, and I'm looking forward to working with you." Tepper looks at Rivera, doesn't say anything to me. Tepper looks at Rivera and says, "Hadn't you been feeding him?" So I look at Tepper, I said, "Seriously? I've met you for 20 seconds and you already run the knife in me?" He said, "Did it take that long?" I said, "No, it was actually more like 8 seconds. He said, "We'll get along fine. The organization could use another bald-headed employee because he doesn't have any hair either." And I rather think he would have liked me more if I could have insulted him in that instance. But I just didn't have it in me. But I'm kind of used to it because people say all kinds of things to me. One time at an event similar to this, this old boy came up to me and grabbed me by my lapels. He said, "Son, I heard you're the voice of the Carolina Panthers." I said, "Yes, sir, that's right." He said, "Well, it's a good thing you're not the face of the Carolina Panthers, or we'd all be in a lot of trouble." A couple years ago, I accepted a speaking engagement this is big time now. Imagine that your job is to accept high-profile invitations like the one I'm about to tell you about. The Haw River Middle School girls softball team year-end banquet. Haw River Middle School girls volleyball. So I said, "Sure, I'll do it." They wanted a speaker. That's my job. I'll drive up. I got some hats. I got some T-shirts. Like the Temptations said, half a house deserves a full show. So the athletic director put out, when she learned, excuse me, when she learned that a Panther representative would be coming, she put out on her Facebook page that Luke Kuechly was going to be the guest speaker. But I don't know this. So I drive up to Haw River, and when I pull into Haw River Middle School, I see this parade. They've got security. They've got ticker tape. They've got this big banquet. I mean, a banner. They have a big banner, and I'm thinking, this is going to be great, man. They're looking forward to meet my speech. But then I get a little worried because the banner says, "Welcome Luke Kuechly." And I was pretty sure Luke and I were not both speaking at this banquet. So imagine their shock and disappointment when 150 pounds of ectomorphic sportscaster gets out of an 05 Nissan Titan pickup truck. They're crying, "He's not, Mommy, he's not Luke Kuechly. He never tackled anybody. I just know it. Who is this guy? He reminds me of like my dad and stuff." So I'm used to the people saying interesting things to me. So David Tepper didn't bother me at all. One time at a cancer banquet, Tim, you might have been at this. There was a big cancer banquet about 5 years ago in Charlotte. And I was this speaker then. It was at the Westin. And the MC that night gets up and he says, to begin the evening, he says, "Ladies and gentlemen, before we get started with our program, I want every cancer survivor." There's about 1,000 people at this banquet. He said, "I want every cancer survivor. There's some at each table. I want them to stand up so that we can shower you with the applause and respect that you so richly deserve." So all around the room on this night, at different tables at the West, and one or two people begin to stand up, and this groundswell of incredibly emotional applause fills the room. And I'm stirring at my salad, and this guy to my left, he nudges me, and he says, "Hey, they want the cancer survivors to stand up." And so now what do I do? So now he thinks that I'm obviously taking chemotherapy or have. So do I stand up and risk getting applause for something I didn't do anything to get? That crossed my mind, to just stand up. Or do I risk embarrassing him, which is what I chose to do? I got the chapstick test right. I figured I'd get this one right. So I said, "Sir," I said, "I know I look a little dinged up, but as far as I know, I do not have cancer." And he kind of looked at me up and down. I was seated, but he kind of looked at me as best he could. And he said, "Well, do you have any other kind of disease?" And then the last one of these I'll tell you about. Before I tell you just a brief bit about our football team, which I'm looking forward to do. A couple years ago at the state fair, these two women come up to me in Raleigh, and they were not attractive women. But they stopped about as far away from me as Theron is, maybe a little closer. But they were studying on me, I could tell. And I was with my wife. I'm married to a little 5 feet of hell, and I love her as much as any man can love his wife. And she, you know how women are. Women know when another woman is looking at their, she's looking at the women as they're looking at me, and she's sort of looking at them going, "You know, old Disco here, he's going home with me, don't you?" But finally, the larger one of the two women said to the smaller one, "Ask him." So the smaller one said, "Excuse me, sir, but are you that Milt Mason, that Mick Mickerson that we hear on the radio on the Panther games?" And I said, "Well, who wants to know?" And the big one looked at the smaller one and said, "Oh my God, it is him." And then the smaller one looked at the larger one and says, "I know, and geez, on the radio he sounds so good looking." So lessons in humility are everywhere, aren't they? Tim, you don't know. Lessons in humility are everywhere. But anyway, I'm passionate about my job. I'm passionate about my employer. And let's take just a moment or two to talk about these Carolina Panthers. But first, I brought with me some items. And there's a lady here who seems to be She's either enjoying herself okay or she's doing a good job of faking it. So to her, we give this child a bankruptcy check. What's your name?
Courtney.
Okay, Courtney, your mother Courtney. Okay, Courtney, thank you. All right, we were 6-2. We got off to a 6-2 start, and people were saying, hey, could this Carolina Panther team, could the 2018 Panthers be even better than our Super Bowl 2015 Panthers? Well, I don't know. Cam Newton's playing great. Keekly, Olsen, Davis, Khalil. I mean, we got building blocks. We got star power. We got these marquee players at the height of their powers. Surely the best is yet to be. Then we go to Pittsburgh and get trucked by the Steelers on Thursday night. But quite naturally, that can happen. That was just an aberration, right? That was just us on short rest. We had to travel. We played a physical game with Tampa Bay Sunday before. Once we get to Detroit, the Lions are going to be in for it. We'll show them. But we don't play well at Detroit. Still, we hang in there, and we go for 2 with 1:07 to go. Cam Newton has Jarius Wright open in the end zone on a 2-point conversion. We could all go have wings and beverages and on into the night. We could talk about should Coach Rivera have gone for it then with 1:07 left. Detroit with 3 timeouts remaining. Detroit with one of the best kickers from distance in the NFL. Matt Stafford with 32 career fourth quarter comebacks. But Coach's Riverboat Ron, he decided to go for it. Cam Newton inexplicably, after being pinpoint accurate, laser accurate, all year he's completed 68% of his passes. He didn't get the lower half of his body and the upper half of his body torqued together, and he threw high. And we fly home 6-4. However, we got Seattle coming in. Once we get at home now, that's where we're really dangerous. Once we get to the Seattle Seahawks, we'll show them. And in a way, we did. On Sunday, Cam Newton was 14 out of his first 14 passes. Christian McCaffrey set a franchise record, over 100 yards receiving and over 100 yards rushing in the single game. But Seattle had it 3rd and 12, and they took a 54-yard bite. Then we got them 3rd and 9, and they throw a touchdown pass right over our heads. We come back and score. We take a 7-point lead. We got them 4th down and 3 from the Carolina 35. All we got to do is make one play. And Russell Wilson throws this teardrop pass to David Moore in the end zone, left corner of the end zone, right over Corn Elder. They convert on 4th and 3. But then we come back. Cam Newton's got 17 career game-winning drives. We come marching down the field. Graham Gano misses a 52-yard field goal. The margins are this thin, so we lose to Seattle. Now, like a millennial brain addicted to Facebook, we're a little distracted. We got this dopamine hit, the thumbs-up emojis, the likes. Our devices are getting ready to get taken away. We got to focus now. Our world is very narrow right now. And as I conclude my prepared remarks, and we'll open it for questions, our world has shrunk down to a tiny little crucible, and that is we got to beat Tampa Bay. We go on the road this Sunday to Tampa Bay. They got the top offense. They're number one in the NFL in total offense. Yet they're unsettled at quarterback. So somehow we got to find a way to beat this club. That's all. No playoffs. No talk of the Saints. No talk about rings. A banner, nothing. We got to just beat Tampa Bay. We got to get that winning feeling back. So with that, we'll get Theron back up here. I think it's about 10 till. So I can't thank you guys enough for your kind attention. I'm sorry again that I'm a little bit hoarse, but go Panthers, and I hope I can come back soon.